I took my reading this morning from the Thoughts from a Gentle Atheist website. I can get you that link. It's another one of my projects. The gentle atheist does not equate religion with superstition. The gentle atheist finds religious belief or non-belief to be irrelevant to a religious life. To be religious is to aspire to a life of significance and meaning in the face of an immense cosmos in which we have more questions than answers. The gentle atheist seeks a life of curiosity, appreciation, and commitment. The immensity of time and space provide greatness and subtlety beyond human imagination. There is no need for superstition, dogmas, or idolatries. In expanding the boundaries of human insight and knowledge lie wonder and mystery enough. At the same time, the gentle atheist acknowledges that belief and disbelief alike can be unhealthy. On the one hand, as ploys to evade the realities of life and death, but also on the other, to evade the need for human commonality and compassion. The gentle atheist holds that morality must derive not from any supernatural source of power or authority, but from mutual commitment to optimal human flourishing. And because human beings flourish best as a respectful part of the natural world rather than an attempted mastery over it, the gentle atheist aspires to a life of sustainable relationship rather than short-term exploitation. And from this comes the gentle atheist's commitment to a life of principle, engagement, and challenge. Religious meaning is attained through a life lived well, courageously, with generosity of spirit. The gentle atheist acknowledges the demonstrated reality of group dynamics, which can lead to self-justification, self-serving delusion, and emotional and even physical violence. In discipline and humility, the gentle atheist resolves to refrain from group assumptions. Our goodness is not enhanced through comfortable condemnation of their badness, whoever they happen to be. The gentle atheist aspires to transcend simplistic us versus them thinking. As part of this, the gentle atheist does not fear the language of religious tradition, but rather takes an analytical attitude toward both its possibilities and its liabilities. As creative minds find value in the arts, in poetry, and in metaphor, there can also be creative language around religion, aspiration, and conscience. The gentle atheist is inclined toward patience and compassion on such issues, while still resisting religious language as a mere abstraction of power or way to evade life's more difficult realities. In all this, the gentle atheist strives for meaning in the face of death, aspiration in the face of the world's harshness, and personal and societal evolution in the face of tragedy, imperfection, and entropy. In my years of active ministry, I would sometimes quip that I was a Buddhist on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, an atheist on Tuesday and Thursday, a Christian on Saturday, and just plain confused on Sunday. All of which was true as far as it went, but if we talked longer, I would always add, you know, if you really hold my feet to the fire and make me choose, I would have to come down as an atheist. In other words, yes, I am an atheist. But my atheism is informed by my Buddhism, strongly informed by my Buddhism, and by my Christian upbringing, and by my appreciation of literature and the arts, and also by what the sciences tell us of the broad cosmos and the journey by which we got here and where we might be going. Human experience is rich and complex, and I do think it's a mistake to try to separate out one segment and say that is or is not religion. Romance and imagery aside, I am personally skeptical that there might be any cosmic personality or force that guides or propels the universe beyond the laws of physics. And those laws and the mystery of all we do not yet know are definitely enough for me. But I still believe in romance and imagery. I believe in poetry. I believe in song. I believe in falling in love with wonder. I have read scientists who are similarly romantically inclined. Doesn't make me special. Life is complex, and to me, to be religious is simply to be earnestly engaged with that complexity. To me, liberal religion is the dance with life and love and complexity and creativity and death. And we sing to these things in our hearts, and we listen for the song to be reflected back to us. Of course, as a Unitarian Universalist, even that much religious speech can risk a bit of controversy. There is tension in many Unitarian Universalist circles between those we call humanists on the one side and those we call spiritualists on the other. And whether we call it the humanist-spiritualist divide or something else, I have been Unitarian Universalist long enough to experience it as a real and genuine tension in many congregations. As a minister, I danced with it in my own congregation, and it was challenging sometimes to try to engage and appreciate all sincere beliefs and non-beliefs among the people of my congregation while still remaining true to the sentiments in my own heart. And at the same time, that dance did also bring greater depth and understanding to my own religious outlook. Diversity of belief is a challenge, but it can have its rewards. As my Spanish teacher used to tell us in high school, a person who does not understand a foreign language does not really understand his or her own. A person who does not understand a foreign language doesn't really understand their own. And that goes for religion as well. There is such richness, insight, learning, and love in our religious diversity. We have such possibilities. It is hard work to find ways to even talk to one another sometimes about our beliefs and non-beliefs, but that discussion is still better than slipping into separate silence, or a religion that consists of nothing more than what we don't believe. As I mentioned, I started out Christian, and it was a long journey from there to my outlook today. It was only when I retired that I really fully came out as an atheist. After all, our church is not about what the minister believes. It's about the hopes and dreams of the whole membership and their beliefs and their non-beliefs. And even now, atheism does not mean I lack a personal sense of wonder and poetry or lack appreciation in all the diverse religious journeys we do celebrate in this rich and various tradition of ours. On the one hand, I do sympathize with humanists who get tired of hearing traditional religious language. On the other, I also sympathize when someone tells me they want to feel as though they've been in a church service Sunday morning, not just a club or symposium. I even have my own personal gripe. This is just mine. When I hear one of my colleagues direct a petitionary prayer to Spirit of Life, I mean, I hope I'm not goring anybody's ox here, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you want to pray to God, then pray to God. Use the word. I can take it. But I'm actually only bringing that up because I realize the solution that would make me comfortable would also make some other people uncomfortable. And that's the way it is with us. We have 1,000 different takes on what language works for us and what doesn't. This is an easy faith when it comes to rules. It's not so easy when it comes to mixing and matching our different beliefs and non-beliefs and sensitivities and preferences. We can only stay in discussion with one another and love and respect one another. The challenge of liberal religion is to keep talking and listening and loving one another in the midst of all our different outlooks and languages. And I do also invite as much compassion and tolerance as possible for the poor minister who has to satisfy all those different opinions. I became Unitarian Universalist, and I remain Unitarian Universalist because to me, we have the most interesting people and the best opportunities for a good discussion. But discussion is best when there's curiosity as well as opinion, and everyone listens as well as talks. And yes, it's hard for me too. There is a strain of atheism, I've heard it called New Atheism, that really is, in my opinion, divisive to such New Atheists as Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris, brilliant though they may be in other ways. Any kind of religious thought is a mental illness, and it's not just them. I regularly hear comments from snarky atheists in other venues and in our own congregations that religion is absurd, that religious people are basically dumb, and that religious thinking is the source of all the world's woes. Now, I suspect popular culture itself lends energy to that kind of snarkiness. I don't see popular culture leading to thoughtful discussion of anything. I swear to God, or whomever, if an alien landed on Earth and listened to talk radio or cable news, they would leave thinking that all Christians hate all gay folks and love any war, and that's not the case, or that all Muslims behead people, or that all atheists think all religious people are stupid. Well, I'm an atheist. I consider myself a religious person, and I don't think I'm stupid. My observation is, popular culture has no use for common ground or thoughtful discussion because, quite simply, common ground and thoughtfulness do not create cash flow. There's more money to be made out of people yelling at each other. Well, now, look at the state of the government today and see where that's gotten us. People who take time to love and learn from one another are not profitable, so you won't find them in popular culture. You have to come to a place like this. And even here, you have to work at it to nurture thoughtful discussion and thoughtful religion. As an atheist looking for common ground between what I'm calling humanism and what I'm calling spiritualism, I find myself right back with the sciences. Atheists though they were, the late Carl Sagan and Stephen Jay Gould, wondrous voices for reason, also wrestled thoughtfully and beautifully with ultimate meaning and the relationship between science and religion. Neil deGrasse Tyson has some beautiful things to say. Science is very much about engaging our sense of wonder, as is liberal religion. To me, science and religion are not in conflict, or at least they shouldn't be. They should be in partnership. Last year, I ran across a fascinating article in Science Magazine, the peer-reviewed journal of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. The cover blurb on this article said it all, quote, "Why it pays to believe in a punitive God." In the article, after years of comprehensive research, a cross-disciplinary team of scientists have developed a theory why so many varied cultures over such a broad span of time all came to worship what the article calls moralizing gods. This moralizing God concept might be theistic, as in Islam, Judaism, or Christianity, might be polytheistic, as in any number of ancient religions, or it might even be a kind of disembodied theism, as in the Buddhist moralizing principle of karma. It ranges from the gods of ancient Greece and Rome and Egypt, clear to the Lord God of Israel, and so on. Now, to these scientists, historical belief in moralizing gods was essential to building the very foundations of modern complex society. Quote, "By combining laboratory experiments and cross-cultural fieldwork and analysis of the historical record, the so-called Big Gods team hypothesizes that belief in those judgmental deities, or big gods, was key to the cooperation needed to build and sustain large, complex societies." Now, that does not mean we all still need to believe in theistic or polytheistic gods, but according to Science Magazine, they may well have played an important role in getting us where we are today. The so-called Big Gods team does acknowledge that much more research needs to be done, and I myself do have one serious caveat with their theory. I noticed that the Science Magazine article said nothing about the role of sociological group dynamics in all religion, ancient, modern, right up to present-day atheism. We all have to beware of our own group dynamics. I absolutely assert you cannot fully understand religion, particularly as practiced in the West, without a basic understanding of group dynamics. And I'm particularly talking about what sociologists call the in-group and the out-group. Very basically, group cohesion was essential to the survival of ancient Homo sapiens, and we evolved to instinctively divide ourselves into us, the in-group, and everyone else, them, the out-group, informing our group as separate from their groups, again, pretty much spontaneously and instinctively. We rather randomly assign positive qualities to our in-group and negative qualities to the competing out-groups. Now, it may not seem random when we're doing it, but from the big picture, it really is surprisingly random. Now, this is very basic stuff. It's been demonstrated in any number of studies. We see it all the time, from Facebook to politics to people rooting for sports teams. It's all about cohesion within our group and competition with other groups. As one example, the whole body of Hebrew law in the Torah largely comes down to the means by which much of it, by which the Hebrew in-group separated itself from other ancient Near Eastern cultures. And in fact, the very Hebrew word for holy basically translates as separate. And we're descended from that, whether we think we are or not. As just one example, the cultured despisers of religion like to point out the ludicrousness of the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill." After all, much of the Torah is a compendium of mass murder and genocide. But it makes perfect sense in the context of group dynamics. The commandment not to kill applies within the in-group, but not with the out-group. We don't kill each other or even the stranger who comes respectfully into our midst, but that does not cover our actions toward the out-group, how we treat them. And even within the in-group, killing is acceptable if someone fails to abide by the in-group's various taboos, that is, the authority of the moralizing God. Thus saith the Lord, "He who wears clothing made of two different fabrics or plants the same field with two different crops is subject to severe penalty, including death by stoning." That's what it says in Leviticus. And I suggest that traditional religion is much about our group in competition with their groups and the authority by which we maintain standards, practices, and membership in our group, all projected onto our moralizing God. And I suggest that sin itself, in the traditionally religious sense, is nothing more than a violation of authority of the in-group and the in-group's religious rules as given by the in-group's moralizing God. Okay. Fast forward 2,500 years to an article I found on Scientific American's website by a couple of psychologists, Sarah Estes and Jesse Graham. They describe progress toward what they're calling religious universalism, and they're not talking about us, Unitarian Universalists. They're using universalism as a sociological term for a religious outlook which, as they put it, quote, reduces authoritarianism, dominance, and ethnocentrism, and even more turns all of humanity into our in-group. That's an amazing little article which captures to me the whole struggle of liberal religion over the past 500 years to abandon the group dynamics and authoritarianism of traditional religion and develop a faith of compassion and relationship which sees all of humanity as our in-group. I think that's a kind of universalism to which anyone can aspire with honor, even the most skeptical atheist. But make no mistake, the most skeptical atheist is still as human as the most fervent fundamentalist theist. We all have human instincts, including group dynamics. So I have to say, knowing that it's likely to be controversial sooner or later, that I find the so-called new atheism's disdain for religion and religious language has little to do with reason or logic, and everything to do with emotion. Group dynamics at play, just the same as fundamentalist theism. Or to put it a different way, group dynamics and group assumptions can take anyone down an irrational road so fast we don't even know it's happening unless we resist them with a healthy dose of compassion and humility. Because once we let group dynamics take over, the only thing that separates us from ISIS or the kind of person who bombs abortion clinics is just how far we're willing to go down that road. Now, that doesn't mean I find all beliefs or non-beliefs equally acceptable. But it does mean a willingness to talk and listen to one another. So when I think of myself as a gentle atheist or recommend what I'm calling gentle atheism, I'm really talking about the willingness to listen, the compassionate willingness to tolerate and even appreciate religious belief and the poetry of religious language, even when they don't jibe with my personal opinion. That's not without its challenges, but what I'm calling gentle atheism is not nearly as much about the atheism as it is about gentle. Belief or non-belief, either one, is really pretty easy in religion. Gentleness in religion is hard. But religion is not about who we can control or who we can outcompete, or at least it shouldn't be. It should be about the wonder and mystery, which are equally accessible, even if they're not quite identical, to the scientist or to the theist, to the Buddhist or to the humanist. It should be about relationship and aspiration and justice and fierce commitment to making all these things the very best and most equitable we can. Human relationships should be gentle without being obedient, courageous without being destructive. It's about humility and compassion and listening to one another, even in the firmness of our own conviction, because make no mistake, I don't think you can even be religious all by yourself any more than you can be loving all by yourself. And there's nothing unique in any of this in Unitarian Universalist circles. I suspect a lot of you atheists do feel similarly. This isn't the kind of religion that gets coverage in the newspapers. It is, however, an approach to religious thought that might help us work together to create a healthier, more just world. Amen. May it be so.